Fincher's film have this specific darkness, literally and figuratively.
An elevator tape projection.
Hey, welcome to Taking It Down, the TV and streaming podcast from the Alabama Take. We give thoughts that range from complex to simple, from analytical to basic about shows and movies on TV. I'm Blaine Duncan, editor-in-chief of the website The Alabama Take. I've always enjoyed determining why I like and dislike things, and I have a little bit of a side hustle as an English teacher, so hopefully that lends itself to our busy listeners who want some insight. It's great for listeners that it's not just me breaking down what you want to know. It's Adam Morrow, our erudite touring and studio musician who keeps up with fine literature, Donovan Reinwald, who specializes in media at a New England college and loves film, old books, and more, and Natalie Morrow. She's the first person to go to about fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and Beyoncé's music. We're here for lovers of television who are just too busy for anything more than the series or movie itself, or maybe for the person who just does not want the typical critic or Hollywood adjacent analysis. Plus, like a lot of Alabama Take productions, we're high quality. We actually think. Let's get into the show. Hey, welcome to Taking It Down. This is us. We're all four back. We're all four here. Donovan's looking up lyrics to songs as we speak. Ignore his tip-tapping on his computer. We're going to talk The Challenge, the new season that's airing on MTV, the staple of MTV. And we're also going to take a break, and then we'll talk about The Killer from Netflix, the movie that's streaming. Because we're TV and streaming. If you listened last week, it didn't sound like we were TV and streaming. It sounded like we were a Beatles fan club, just riffing.
A few things can be true at once, can't they?
Oh, 100%. I can hold two or three thoughts at once in my mind.
So long as they don't oppose.
No, they can oppose.
Well.
I'm grown.
Braggart.
So let's do it. Let's just fire away. Challenge, new champion. What's the subtitle this season? The Challenge, a search for a new champion.
Battle for a new champion?
Battle. They're not searching. They're battling. Here we are. We haven't talked about this season, except for maybe like the first episode very briefly. So we got a few episodes under our belt, and this week was a double feature, so to speak. They laid two on us. That was odd.
They're ready to get to the champions.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. That it struck me as odd, but then they did the little preview. I'm going to show you who's coming up. So we'll get to that in a second. There's almost too much going on outside of the challenges. I don't know if I've been able to keep up with all this. Because the faces, maybe you're still fresh and new. Who's beefing with whom?
I kind of like it. It feels like one of the older seasons before they turned into professional challengers with like a pretty rigid game style, and like, you know, they're like getting drunk and being kind of sloppy again.
Yeah, there's some of that. I agree. They are starting to show their personalities, I think, finally. Like, I'm trying to figure out who is whom with their style of being in the game. Do you guys have any standouts that we haven't seen much before this season?
I still am not sure that I know who most of them are.
That's kind of fair, I think.
I think everybody that I am rooting for has been on at least one season before. Like, I really like Ed.
Yeah, you're still big into Ed. Ed came in just bulked, man. He still has the same personality, but he kind of looks just like a gym rat now or something.
Yeah, and I get the feeling that he is, you know, he kind of showed a little bit of it this week with the math stuff. Like, he's an actual intelligent person with like an adult life that's fairly together, which is a little different than maybe some of them. Yet whenever there's like drama happening, like a couple weeks ago, he was in the background just at the bar trying to order a beer, like completely oblivious to whatever was going on. And this week when the drama broke out, he was just dancing beside the pool. I like that.
There's also that great shot of him. I'm talking about him, Ed. And Mariah's laying on the bed and talking to James, and he's just there, third wheeling.
Yeah.
Just third wheeling.
Just hanging.
Definitely talking about Ed from that scene, though.
Yeah.
Nothing else to be said about that scene.
I don't know. The establishing shot there was a choice.
I mean, my goodness. This does bring me to James, whom I wanted to talk about. I'm just bored with that guy, man.
He seems like the worst.
He does. And you see, how do you get gassed in the elimination he was in? I know there's a lot we don't see. It takes, you know, an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours to do the elimination. But Chauncey wasn't that gassed.
No.
I was just thinking, if he runs a final,
he'll just die.
And I don't know if that wouldn't be great television.
It would be excellent television.
Do we think Ed has the cardio that James doesn't? Because they're kind of built the same.
Yeah, I think Ed is like an actual athletic guy. And I think James seems kind of just like a gym dude who forgot that his legs exist.
And his lungs. I did love the most recent episode, the double feature there. I think it was in the second. TJ calling out all the burn voting. That might have been the first. I like it when TJ does that. It's like, wait, I'm picking up a pattern here. You're all burn voting.
I don't really understand that.
I didn't quite. That's what I'm saying. There's a lot of drama and a lot of, maybe not intrigue, but there's a lot of the politics I don't know if I get yet.
I think they're also just bad at playing the game.
That's true.
I don't think they are able to think on their feet quite as fast as the challenge vets. What do you think, Nat? You've seen this more than anybody.
I don't think it was like when the girls all burn voted. Like, I understand they don't want to, they're trying not to be targeted by the girl who's going to go in. Like, I get that.
Sure.
It's like the smartest thing you can do? Probably not. But when everybody was upset that they were doing it, it's like that is fine. But when the guys did it this the second episode, I didn't really know what they were doing, what they were thinking. It does feel very much like there's a reason none of these people have won before. It's because they're not good at the game. And now you just have a house full of people who aren't good at the game.
That's a really good point.
Jay is kind of like the voice of reason, and he's never made it past halfway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big T trying to also provide some guidance here and there.
Nobody wants to listen to Big T.
No, they aren't. Is Huey a loss to the week-to-week antics?
Yes.
Is he?
100%. Yeah.
He can get
Send
on my
Corey
nerves.
Home, keep
yeah.
Huey.
Yeah, okay. I don't disagree with that for sure. Huey can get on my nerves. I'm kind of like, was it Ed this week who said Huey's just in my ear constantly? No, it wasn't Ed. It was Asaf who said he's just in my ear. That's kind of how I feel about Huey on some episodes, but I also think he's kind of funny, and he's gotten to where his personality fits quite well with what the show does. I don't know if he molded it that way or if he's probably just always been this way, but kind of a loss. He's going home, but I never saw him as a danger in competition. He's
no.
more of a
no, definitely not
more of a goofball for the camera and the confessionals. I'm still pulling for Horacio a lot. I really like him. I always did. You know, he won those four eliminations in his very first season, made it to a final, and his partner Olivia, who's on this season, got hurt, unfortunately, and they had to be disqualified. So I don't know why he wouldn't do well again.
He's not good at the game, though.
Like, what do you mean? Which part?
He's a good physical competitor. But his like social game and political game is terrible. It's one of the reasons they kept getting sent in last time. If Olivia weren't there to make him shut up and help him make friends, he would not have done as well as he did.
But they did almost. I think they would have won the final if she hadn't gotten hurt.
They definitely would have won the final. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like physically, if he makes it to the final, it's going to be tough to beat him.
Yeah.
But I think he's got some major hurdles in the sense of just making friends.
Which is also a credit to Olivia in that final, that she was completely keeping pace with him. So she's pretty dangerous where it's only going to be one winner this year. I mean, it could totally be her.
I hope it is.
We did mention Mariah. She did quite well for her season, having never been on her first season with Ride or Dies.
She was with Fessy, right? Is that right?
Yeah, she was very competitive.
So you have to question her judgment then. Yeah. Can't be that bright.
Well, Fessy and now James is kind of like, come on.
And, you know, she's what, in a year-long on and off, not quite relationship with Bananas?
I think the kids call that a situationship.
Oh, thank you.
Do they?
This is why we bring in the college professor right there.
Yeah, I'm sure that I'm very in tune with the youths.
As a high school teacher, I am not. I am not. I'll say it here. Y'all can scream and yell. I'm not crazy about this season.
I think there's a lot of people who aren't.
Okay. Yeah, is our buddy Jeff, we mentioned Jeff, the mysterious Jeff we always mention on the show. Is he into it as much?
I think he is. He like caught up a lot this week. He watched them back to back. Maybe they do better that way because the stakes feel kind of low because That's we it. Don't, outside of, for me, Horacio, Ed, and Olivia, there's a few others that I like, but those are like the three that I'm rooting for actively.
Me too.
You know, when you watch like the classic season, you have a whole set of people that you want to make it to the back third of the game so that they can really play. That's not really happening this time.
I think they definitely, when they cast this season, they still could have done Battle for a New Champion, but had more familiar faces on it. Like, I think they went a little too far. They dug a little too deep on the cast.
You could have a Corey Nelson.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, not Nelson, but I get the idea. You're exactly right. Yeah, you got to think Corey's at home going, motherfuckers.
Like, why isn't Leroy here? You know, granted, he's got his
wife,
children, but
kids, yeah.
Yeah, good Leroy. It's you get the idea that they're shooting for maybe three seasons or less. Put them in a pile, make them face off against champions. I think I will really start getting much more invested when the champions start showing up. The next one promises to be Jordan. Boom, take my money, right? I'm in.
Yeah.
I also, do you remember an earlier trailer where Emmanuel calls him out and Jordan's like, "I hope you get down here. I hope you end up down here." Man. Just feed me that.
Yeah. That would be great.
Going to be good. So I think that's just what it needs. I bet the execs at MTV were sitting around the table and said, look at these ratings. Let's go ahead and get to the champ showing up.
That's kind of been the debate this week. Was this a planned move preseason, or are they kind of like reflecting on the ratings and thinking we got to get these familiar faces in there?
It feels to me like a ratings move.
Is there going to be an episode next week? Because I wonder
with
if it
Thanksgiving?
Was like we want to get our champs in before a Thanksgiving break or something.
Interesting. Maybe so. Don't know. The Wednesday before Thanksgiving, though, that's some quality TV time for me.
Yeah.
We're going to bid Natalie and Adam adieu as they helped us out with the challenge. Some thoughts. Because we're going to take a break, and then on the other side of this break, we'll be talking about Netflix's The Killer.
Killers of the Flower Netflix.
Something like that. Yeah, Napoleon's an Apple movie, too, which I found to be interesting.
Can I watch it now?
I wish. I bet that some bitch is going to be 4 hours long.
Oh, man, I can't wait.
If you're lucky.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
See y'all.
Going to be like the classic Russian War and Peace, which is literally like 8 hours long, and HBO has split into three movies, although it was released as one.
It's got to be long. There's just no way around it.
I mean, even if you start with him as a fairly young, because it looks like they're talking about him as a young officer in Egypt, he just did too much.
Hey, if you want to hear more about this, we talked a little about the Napoleon trailer in the YouTube, which we're trying to think of a name for. So if you got a good idea, you could shout it out to us. Well, I was thinking the bullshit corner, but I don't know. Will that stick?
Talking about Napoleon.
Talking about Napoleon. We talked about a few other things, too.
We'll just talk about it every week.
Up until we see Napoleon. It, and then we'll talk about it again.
then we're bitterly disappointed.
Probably not. It looks very visually stunning enough. So.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a good time.
So here we are, we're back on the hit list today as The Killer. You like that?
I did, that was good.
That's good, yeah. Huh?
Come up with that?
Yeah. Could you tell? From director David Fincher. Listeners, you know David Fincher, even if you think you do not know him. He's the director of Seven, Panic Room, Fight Club, Zodiac, Gone Girl, which I'd forgotten he did that, The Social Network. And with Aaron Sorkin, of course. I think Sorkin may get a little bit more credit for that movie than Fincher, but my goodness, it's a Fincher movie. And he's responsible for the creation and many of the episodes in the director's chair of the Netflix series Mindhunter. To me, Mindhunter may be one of the best things Netflix has done maybe ever for a television show. I think he had a big hand in House of Cards early in its when it was good. I think Donovan, I have settled on the idea that he is one of my favorite working directors, maybe my favorite working director. And I'm pretty pumped about getting to discuss The Killer. It's got Michael Fassbender as an assassin who's in a battle with his employers. It's based on a French comic book, which I'd never heard of, but it's also called The Killer.
Same.
Yeah, no? Okay.
Never heard of it.
Good. Me either. I didn't even know until I watched the movie and discovered. We will certainly be spoiling the movie, as is our want, so come back if you haven't seen it. But wait just a bit before we get into spoilers in case you want some general impressions. I will get the ball rolling. Man, here's my thing. I like David Fincher films not because I'm supposed to like them, but because I just like them.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's also can sometimes be that director where you're kind of supposed to like his work sometimes.
Yeah. Like, I'm not, I know this is heretical to a bunch of people. I'm not really a big fan of Fight Club.
Yeah, you've said that, I think.
Some of the stuff like that. But I do like a lot of the other stuff, that, especially, you know, you brought up Mindhunter. And when he's involved and he's directing an episode, you can really tell because it clicks. Man knows how to, like, make something watchable, if you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, he's actually pretty good.
Yeah, and we'll apply that idea to this movie in just a bit. Fincher's film have this specific darkness, literally and figuratively.
Mm-hmm.
But I just love movies to explore that figurative side of darkness. He does it all the time. It's like his forte. That just scratches me where I itch. That's what I want out of movies. My head will go there often on my own, and and then he applies literal darkness. A lot of people will complain about his scenes being too dark, darkly lit, but I'm there for it, man.
Yeah, I would, probably not a productive way to put the conversation, but like annoying darkly lit, any DC movie. Like using darkness as like part of your palette. Definitely this movie. You know?
That's it.
Like, understanding how to use it.
His color palette is always in the dark.
Absolutely.
And I just love that visual.
And he's dark, but it's also, like, he's so good at incorporating, like, just really harsh forms of artificial life. Light, not life.
Oh, you're right.
You know, where it's, like, that feeling you have of being in a parking garage.
My God. Yeah, I was just about to say that. With the what do you call that lot? Why am I blanking on things today? The, you know, like that's in classrooms and stuff all the time.
Yeah, like a harsh fluorescent or something like that.
The very harsh fluorescent. That's it. And it just drains you of your energy. And everybody in his films look drained of their energy.
It's great. Like, he can, like, atmosphere. You know what? He's not my favorite living American filmmaker. I think working director. Sure. I think I would give that to the Coens if they ever reunite. Mm. But he is so good at creating a mood.
Mm-hmm.
Even, like, I there were points, and not the same thing, but definitely doesn't work with the same guy. There were even points during this movie where I thought of Zodiac, just the way he moves through the city in Zodiac.
Yes.
And, friends, if you like Zodiac, and I think it's quite a good movie, you are going to like The Killer.
Yeah. Zodiac and Fight Club are two of my favorites. And Seven shook me in a way that I didn't know movies could do at that age. So I saw it when I was, 16, I guess? And I just, driving to the movies on my own, I was like, whoa, all right. I mean, I get it. It's cliche. It's just a serial killer movie. Okay, big deal. But I don't know. I mean, just it had some sort of resonance to it that your standard director just can't apply.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I thought you'd say Scorsese is your favorite.
You know, I really like Scorsese.
I do too.
He's really good. But I think you know how, like, it's almost kind of like what you said about Fincher, where it's like that something about the Coens just scratches that itch.
Yeah.
Like, they'll just have...
Now, they're up there for me. They're in my top three.
I don't know what it is, but it'll just be like... I don't know. But I do... Scorsese is a master and very good, too.
Of my top three movies, it's Fincher, Coens, then Fincher again. I think if I rank them. I think if I rank them, that's 1, 2, 3.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's... If it maintains this, and I've gotten a little older and a little away from it, but one is Fight Club, two is No Country for Old Men, and three is Zodiac.
That's a good top three.
It's just, like I said, it's me. I get that that's not for everyone. So, let's get into The Killer. Just general impressions, and then we'll spoil, just in case anybody's still with us. Were you with it? What'd you think?
Yeah, I was with it. It is, yeah. So I will say to folks that it is slow.
Very.
But in the sense that it is deliberate. Yeah. And I think they do a very good job of that kind. So there's at the start of the movie, there's a, what would you say, Blaine? About 25 minutes where he's in Paris and he's...
I've got it noted as 30.
Mm-hmm. 30, okay, yeah, 25, 30 minutes.
It's the whole first act.
One of the things he says in that is like, you know, if you're bored, if you get bored, find another job.
And? And that stuck out to you too. Because I noted that. Right. I was like, mm-hmm, that's where, this is the ride we're on, isn't it?
Yep. But I liked, even though it was, I was not bored. Like slow and boring can be synonymous and often are.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have that problem with this one, especially because I really did like that 30-minute intro where he is just he's painstakingly setting things up. He's working in an old WeWork. And it's even kind of funny, right? Like, he even goes to McDonald's. He's yeah. like, I'm pretending to be a German tourist because everyone hates German tourists.
Great know? Line.
He's listening to the Smiths while it's his work mix. Yeah. You know, it was, and then I don't know. Of course, like, you knew it was going to go sideways, and of course it did for mm-hmm. all that. And it was great. Mm-hmm.
All the meticulous attention to detail he puts into his work, and it still goes sideways. Yeah. To me, that's a huge claim that the movie's making.
Totally. Because he did everything right.
Yep.
And he still screwed it up.
This is not my favorite Fincher film. I was hoping it would be. I was hoping mm-hmm. it would grab me by the lapels and do to me what Fight Club and Seven and Zodiac did, but it didn't. I did find it just a little boring, a little tedious. Sure. Not bad. Not bad, because like we were talking about earlier, Fincher still is able to maintain my attention with his set design and use of the outside world as a set and color it the way he does.
Yeah, so, man knows how to make a movie at this point in his life.
Oh, for know? Sure. I would really like to talk to him. He's kind of one of these guys. You don't hear this a lot, maybe, unless they're film buffs, but he's a filmmaker I'd like to talk to.
He. I wonder how he would be, since he has that, you know, I've read reviews mm-hmm. of this movie commenting on, you know, Fincher has a reputation for being meticulous to the point of obsessiveness.
I can understand.
And folks, critics kind of drawing parallels between that and the character, so much so that one critic was even like, this feels like Fincher's most personal movie, because it's about
yes,
someone
who said
trying
that?
To control everything, and then it fucks up anyway.
Yeah, what critic was it that said that? I think I saw the same
Brian Tallarico,
was it?
I think.
Tallarico? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, let me double check.
That was over on Ebert.com.
Ebert, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, the first 30 minutes, we're going to start spoiling, by the way. This is our line in the sand, okay? We haven't, actually. Nothing major yet. So, those entire first 30 minutes, I would think that's the whole first act, is done in a voiceover, too, with Fassbender's assassin laying out his job and worldview.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you get some finger wagging at doing too much voiceover sometimes. Did you?
I mean, have you ever seen the cut of Blade Runner? I've not watched all of it, but the original cut where Harrison Ford is doing a voiceover and he sounds like he wants to blow his brains out.
I can't remember. I've seen two versions of that movie, and I'm guessing that has to be one of them, right?
It's horrendous, and this is not that.
Yeah.
Because Fassbender is really... Did you ever... So it's not a great movie, right? But did you ever watch Prometheus, where he plays the kind of the robot, the android?
I didn't. That's a Ridley Scott one.
He is so good at being emotionally emotionless.
Yeah.
You know, like his voice acting is voice acting there is good. And I think that the voice acting matches with what is happening on camera in a way that makes it, and I found it engrossing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I thought it was great.
Yeah, that first 30 minutes is two thumbs up.
Stellar. And bleak thing too. You know, he's a surprise. He's a somewhat bleak person.
Yeah, I kept wondering. This is really dumb, but this is the kind of place that you and I can tend to go.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times, I was thinking, how old is Fassbender? And I kept thinking, am I older than Fassbender?
I don't know.
He looks so good for his age, maybe, but he might be younger than I.
I honestly don't know how old he is.
That, you know, that's sometimes a great sign of an actor. Great sign of a good actor is you just don't know how old he is. You couldn't tell how old he is here. He's not asked to do a lot facially during these voiceovers. He's just doing his job.
No. Yeah, he's
look tired and bored, I guess.
It's not exciting. Mm-mm. Which makes it, for me, made it great.
Right.
You know, right? Because you're right. Like, he's looking through his, he's spying on the building. He's doing his exercises. He's, he's just sitting and waiting.
Yep.
Somebody actually, and this is a critic guy, the guy named Scout Tafoya, compared it to, if you like so there's this series of books by this guy, Donald Westlake, who would write in the pseudonym Richard Stark, and he has a character called Parker that Lee Marvin was in a movie called Point Blank based on the first one. And he said it reminded him so much of this Parker stuff, where Parker will do, you know, like, I'm ordering like 6 cups of coffee every day, you know, or coming in and doing one thing a day just to see how the thing worked. Like, the tediousness and the timing of it and the professionalism of it, where it's at, but it's done so well, it's not boring, it's engrossing. Because, like, normal people can't do this.
Right. You got to be careful when you have almost a form equals content on tediousness.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to drive your audience away.
Yeah.
Doesn't quite do that. I did find it just a little slow. I thought it could be trimmed by a few minutes. But another thing for Fincher, and this is probably as much Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, Fincher's soundscapes are so, what, visceral? Bone shaking,
man. Just like, you know, the looking, and again, this is not me. This is coming from some critics I read. But I guess with a lot of this movie, this is a whole like the gang's all back together kind of thing. Like, yeah, Reznor and Ross,
yeah,
melded. You know, sometimes there was one bit early in the movie where he's walking down the street in Paris talking to his partner. And the ambient noise is there, and then it moves into the soundtrack, you know, and it's great. It just sounds great. Like, it moves from one thing to the other so effortlessly.
Yeah, a credit to Reznor and Ross that they can make me a little bit afraid just with a bit of music.
They will put you on edge.
Yep. Like when he has the secretary Dolores, and he has her captive, and he goes to her home. And he opens her garage. Right then is when I was like, ooh, this soundtrack's getting to me.
Yeah.
The chapter title, I'm moving ahead quite a bit. The chapter title, The Brute, aptly set in Florida, had one of the best fight scenes since Eastern Promises.
You know, it's funny you say that because I also, side note, I think I'm talking myself into really liking this movie. But watching that, I was like, holy shit, like the big guy, like his hits seem brutal, you know, and he like, you know, good for whoever did the choreography and let him smash the room up. Because I mean, like, it's almost like terrifying. Like, this guy is so much bigger and stronger, really.
Yeah, you know,
like
he
smashes his closet door just by accident. It was great. It was great. And I would agree. Are you thinking of the Eastern Promises scene in the bathhouse?
Yes.
That's a very good one.
That's probably the best fight scene ever.
I was thinking, yeah, this does not look, it's obviously choreographed very well, but does it look choreographed?
It
looks really pretty vicious.
I thought it looked vicious, but also a bit choreographed in a kind of a beautiful way, like a very art kind of
absolutely.
Way.
Yeah. I mean, whoever put this together was... knew what they were doing.
Yeah, it's so much
but
better
it,
than...
But it also is just like... It's not superheroes punching each other.
That was what
like,
I was going to say.
It's much better than that.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, it takes time to choreograph such a fight and film that. I did see a New York Times review on this that complained about that, said it was too dark. But I didn't...
Really?
I didn't think it was. It
didn't bother me at all. I felt like I could see everything perfectly. And the atmosphere was perfect, too, I thought. Yeah.
What did you make of the expert, Tilda Swinton's character, and her joke about the hunter and the bear? Do you like that? I like that joke.
I mean, we're at the point with Tilda Swinton where she can say just about anything, and I like it.
Okay. You know, but that's a trope, isn't it?
She's kind of trying to dig into him a little bit,
I think so,
she?
Yeah.
And,
of course.
And he's having none of it.
this is a very writerly thing. It's a trope where they, I've got my character about to die, and they go, let me tell you a little story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's such a thing now, but...
It is a little cliche, right? But she pulls it off, right? She does a good job. Her delivery is perfect. I like Tilda Swinton an awful lot.
Yeah, I'm okay with her. Whenever I see actors doing this as characters, of course, I'll lean in, though. I'll be like, all right, here comes this trope, but what are they going to try to do?
How are you going to pull it off?
Yep. I appreciate how the assassin was never really humanized unless you're counting his girlfriend.
I mean, he said it himself, right? Like, forbid empathy.
Boy, does he.
I mean, you know, there's certainly a debate to be had about, like, what do we gain or lose by watching such a studiously amoral person?
Now, that's exactly what I was going to go with this, because I don't care about that conversation. I do not care about that. You know, back when Breaking Bad was at its height, that was the discourse. Do we really pull for a man who has such bad morals? He's fiction. You can pull for him. I'm not going to go murder my neighbor because I pull for Walter Wright. It's okay. Doesn't make me a bad person. Anyway, so I appreciated it. Don't humanize it. Just shit. Tell me this story.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that's deliberate, right? Like, there really was no, like you said, like, oh, I had a bad child. The most we find out about him, really, is that he has a house, he has a girlfriend, and he might have been a law student at one point.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That's pretty much it.
That's it.
And he's very good at what he does, until he's not.
Mm. If you've held on this long and you haven't, and you really don't want to be spoiled, you might want to dive out right here. This movie held tightly to its thesis up until the very end, the last scene. I mean, it wanted you to think it was a standard, mostly standard assassin gets revenge story. I even thought 3/4 of the way through this, well, I've seen this before, but it, you know, at least it's David Fincher. Okay, whatever. But its complexity lies heavily in those final moments.
Yeah.
So I came to the conclusion that it may be a little too slowly structured to garner a lot of likes and viewers, but for me, a movie can make or break itself with its final point, even if it's a little slow. So you want to try to unpack that last bit? Why didn't he kill the guy who really deserved it more than anyone, maybe?
I think he was just terribly impressed by the man wearing a Sub Pop t-shirt.
That's a good point. Because I noticed it. I was like, oh, God, am I that old now? If I wore a Sub Pop, am I him?
Yeah, this is a question that I don't know if I have anything smart to say about it.
Dude, I've racked my brain for 16 hours now to try to think of something intelligent.
Yeah, because, and you know, it kind of, for me, and this may be just completely off base, but okay, he doesn't kill the guy who basically tries to have him, in essence, puts in motion having him killed.
Mm-hmm.
So why did he kill all those other people?
Right.
You know? It's like the lawyer, the guy that's his partner, the guy that kind of
none of them are named. Says, well, he actually does have a name.
Yeah, he has got it because it's on his door. I can't remember what it is, Hodson or something like that.
Sure.
You know, he's like, you've got more. I never thought you would go home. You've got more money than you could ever. You know, like, why? What are you getting out of it? And then he doesn't kill this guy, and it's like,
mm-hmm.
Okay. So what is he like? Why did he kill those people? You know, was it revenge? Was it safety? Was it, you know, because it seems like, one, he'd be safer if this guy's out of the way, but he lets him go.
He could totally put another hit on him.
Uh-huh. And then, you know, he's back in, you know, Dominican Republic, not a care in the world.
Yeah, I was a little concerned that Fincher was trying to say that we need the few. We, the many, need the few. You know, that allows us to do our jobs without too much interference.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, well, maybe the killer really is a part of the few. He just won't admit it. And if this is a comment on class structure, if the killer is death and his mantras are how the Grim Reaper see life, then death is just random. I don't know. I couldn't really pinpoint what I wanted it to say to me.
Yeah. Edit out this long pause because that's just me thinking about what you said. Yeah, you know, I agree. there is almost something that I think Fincher did, and actually Fassbender, his acting does very well, which is there's something almost inhuman about this character, where like you, and I kind of wonder if this isn't something that Fincher's interested in, seeing as he's done, like, you know, he's done Zodiac, he's done Mindhunter, right? Like, mm-hmm. like what would it take to be a person who does such things?
Yeah.
And can they be understood?
Yeah, there's that going on. If you put this one in conversation with Fight Club, which is so anti-capitalist, this mm-hmm. one is almost a flip of it.
I don't think this one's all in on capitalism.
I mean, the billionaire lives, you know?
He does, but he's also not the good guy. He's not, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, and I guess if you do have the assassin kill him at the end, it becomes just your standard movie. There's a certain right. that. So it's a nice subversion.
Yeah, of expectation. I agree. Yeah, I almost don't know what to make of it. Although, because I do think, even though he didn't kill them, there's a way to look at it where he defeats him, right? Mm. For all the money in the world.
Yeah.
And I can get to you anytime I want.
Mm-hmm. And I'll, if you try to get me, I will kill you in a horrible way.
Yes.
I like that. It was a good ending, especially with the subversion. It gave me the aha moment where he's back on the beach with his girlfriend and you go, oh, okay. That's what kind of movie I was watching. And that's fun in a way.
It is, especially, I don't want to drag this out too much, but I'm thinking about it in the light of probably his most pitiless kill of Dolores. I think it, because he did not have to kill her, but he did.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think he did have to kill him, and he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, food for thought.
He kills Dolores quickly. Maybe the most painlessly, perhaps, maybe. Yeah. Well, I love talking about this one. Wasn't necessarily my favorite venture by any stretch, but it's a good one to talk about and have seen. So.
Yeah, you know, I enjoyed watching it. It passed the phone test, once or twice when I was like, how long is this again?
Yeah.
Because it is a little slow. But I think talking this one over, I've kind of talked myself into liking it a lot more than I thought I did. And I did think I liked it.
Yeah, it's a good one to talk about. But so you got to watch it first. That's the deal.
I mean, it is one of, like, if nothing else about it, it is just a well-made movie. Like, this is a quality object, you know. So watch it, enjoy somebody and a team of somebodies who really know how to put something together at this point, and just enjoy the skill.
And I like it when directors decide, I need an actor for 6 minutes of screen time, but I want a really good one.
Yeah.
I'm always a fan of that. So, like, Tilda Swinton being part of it. And I think his name is Charles Pesnell, the lawyer. Right. He's always good. Well, that takes us to the end of this week's episode. We're off next week, and we'll be back the week after. Maybe caught up on some things. Got some shows. Any interest in All the Light We Cannot See, Donovan?
Some of the reviews have been real rocky, so I'll have to think about it.
Oh, man, that stinks because, like I mentioned, the work it's based off of is pretty good. World War II.
Well, it won a Pulitzer, didn't it? The novel? Am I crazy in thinking that?
It either won that or the National Book, and I can't remember which.
Okay. The reviews for the show so far have been fairly rocky.
Wow, even with Mark Ruffalo in it. How?
Yeah, I know.
How could they? How dare they? That's it. Follow the podcast on Twitter or X and Threads, Instagram, Blue Sky, TikTok. And let's see. The Alabama Takes, our production, our home site. You can go there and follow them on any social media as well. And we'll talk to you in 2 weeks this time. See ya.